Welcome to Front Row Backstage, the show that takes you behind the velvet ropes of the media world. I'm LCC student Greg Trimmer, and each week we'll explore the stars you see on screen, stage, and radio, and the tech and talent making the magic happen behind it. From unsung heroes to spotlight sensations, we've got the stories you won't hear anywhere else. So grab your popcorn and let's dive in. Welcome, guys. Today, I am here to introduce you to Cloverbeard and Crew, a three-piece band from Central Michigan. Their mix of traditional Irish and modern music brings life to Renaissance fairs, pubs, and wherever else you might see them playing. Welcome, guys. Go ahead and introduce yourself, each of you.
Hello, I'm Cloverbeard, a.k.a. Sean Garrix. I suppose I should have said I'm Sean, a.k.a. Cloverbeard. But
you did, hey, man, if that's how you see yourself, it's fine. It's fine.
That's what I'm here to talk about. And I have been Cloverbeard for about 11 years, and I'm glad to have picked up these two to be crew.
Well, I am Aaron Greenwood. I am go by Flute Man Greenwood at Renaissance Fairs. Been part with Cloverbeard for a couple years now, and it's a fun ride.
My name is Catherine, or Cat, depending on how much energy you want to put into it, and I'm Crimson Freebooter, the drummer, and I've been a part of it four years now, around there. I can't quite remember now. But yeah, it's been a very interesting ride so far.
So, like you guys just touched on it, each of you has a stage name. Catherine is Crimson what?
Freebooter.
Freebooter. And the lead singer, Sean, is Cloverbeard. And then we have Flute Man Greenwood, who's Aaron. Each of you kind of go around and talk about, Aaron's is kind of obvious, but like, where did those names come from? What sparked that idea? Sean, you've been Cloverbeard for 11 years, you said. I guess starting with you, what was the inclination when you were first diving into trying to put a name to your artistry? What made that come to be?
So at first I wasn't doing it for artistry. I was told I was Cloverbeard by a girl who I don't particularly remember because it was a long time ago. But I was at the fountain at the castle at Ren Fair, and she put shamrocks into my beard and said, "You're Cloverbeard." And I was like, "Oh my God." And I remember that more than I remember her.
Shout out Mysterious Girl.
At the time, I was just in between. I'd been with Boca Musica for a little bit, and at the time I was Peter Longfellow, if I was going by a character name, because Boca does naughty humor, and they required that you made like a character biography.
Oh, okay.
So I went from being Peter Longfellow to Cloverbeard.
Cloverbeard just has a more of a gravity.
Oh, yeah. It's like Blackbeard, but it's Cloverbeard.
Yeah.
It's the Irish pirate. It worked. Because I play maritime and Irishy music. Well, I used to mostly just do that. Now we play everything.
Everything.
Do you guys have a, what's that one? There's a cover you guys do that's like a metal band or something.
Toxicity, like System of a Down.
Yeah. They do a cover of Toxicity by System of a Down that is so good. It's like a, I don't know, what you call folk cover or something.
I think it would count as a folk cover. Yeah.
Something to the, I don't know. It's its own thing.
No one expects to hear it either.
Everybody stops and stares when they hear it. It's hilarious to watch.
Like you guys were at Mulligan's Pub. And I'd heard it before because I'd heard you guys performing at Ren Fairs and stuff. But there was a bunch of people that had never listened to you guys before in the room. And I saw a couple guys and they were like, "Is this System of a Down? What is it?"
Especially when you start with like old Irish tunes and you're hitting that. "She's a bonny lass," and "Oh, my Irish eyes," and all that kind of dumb stuff. And then play the metal. Well, Legend of Zelda first to lead into it. People recognize that one. They're like, "Oh, cool, you know, whatever, piracy, adventure." He plays at Ren Fairs. Zelda makes sense. Yeah. And then
get drawn in with Zelda, then stay for the System of a Down.
Yeah, I mostly play music based on what I think people want to hear. Honestly, I just started with like a lot of the old traditional stuff because that's what I learned from the musicians I listened right. to at fair and the crowds that I would go be a part of. So I just try to learn my favorites of those.
So that's a good segue. First, what are some of the songs that are like staples? Like what, like you play them every single set? Like
the star of the county down. It's like one, it's like my favorite one. These guys are getting sick of it, but I'm like,
hey, it's only when it's at Michigan Renaissance Festival when we play it four times.
I'm just so proud of you guys. It sounded so good.
Hey, you know, I love the song too.
I'm messing around with like the effects, yeah. putting on that snapback reverb and then hitting the distortion on the flute.
Oh, it sounds so majestic.
Yeah, it's coming in over the hills. Oh.
Battle flute, go.
The pirates who don't do anything is a good common encore.
VeggieTales, man.
We play the Pokemon theme in the middle of that because we know our millennial audience.
Wait, you do?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, no, he didn't prepare us for it at all. No, the first time he did it, no preparedness at all. He just went straight into it on stage, and I don't think I've ever noticed it.
We didn't start doing this until Michigan Renaissance Festival
this year.
Okay. Yeah. It started at Murph.
But I saw you guys a couple times at Murph at the Red Lion. I don't know.
I think it started near the... Yeah, end, it was about two-thirds of the way through the year.
Yeah.
That's great,
and
though.
It went through a few iterations before locking in. We know how we do it now. We're always flying by the seat of our pants.
Hey, sometimes that's the best.
It's how we were trained.
Yeah. It's how we were trained.
That's how we were trained.
But we play a mix of old traditional music as well as original stuff that I wrote that I'm also really proud of.
Yeah.
Especially the Bard and Jack of All Trades. Those two, Jack of All Trades
is a great song.
Yeah, like I'm really proud of my chord progressions in there. They're a little non-standard for parts of it.
And, hey, non-standard chord progressions. We take that anytime we get. So that's not just the same four chords of like every song ever.
It's a fun one. I like that. I've got a friend who we were talking about the music I play, and we were talking about the old traditional songs. It's Nevada, who also drummed for me at one point. You might have seen him on stream on one of the lives that we did as Patch Hatter, although his name's changed a few times too. But we were talking about the traditional songs. He's like, yeah, you know, like Whiskey in the Jar and Jack of All Trades. And I was like, Jack of All Trades is mine. I wrote that. And he's like, you wrote that? Yeah, he's like, I thought that was one of the old ones.
That's
like one
a
of
huge
the,
compliment yeah, if it so. Sounds like, if he thinks it sounds like a traditional song.
And people have said it. Oh, I haven't heard that one since I was a boy. And I'm like, impossible.
Impossible. We kind of touched on this a little bit already, obviously, within this. What do you guys think your favorite song to perform is? And I want each of you to answer.
Let's start with Crimson.
No, I'm thinking, go first. I'm literally thinking, go first.
Let's start with Greenwood. We have a lot of fun.
There's so
He's
many.
Calling everybody out except himself.
We have a lot of stuff that's just
There's
so fun
so
to play.
Oh, yeah.
Fuji is a really good one when you get the crowd involved.
That one is one of the best ones. Or if we go with, I can't remember it right now either.
I can't remember, but I love it.
It's like, my favorite. What's it called again?
They're the obvious ones, you know, like getting to play Health to the Company at the end of a day is always.
Oh, yeah.
Health to the Company. Such a good song.
And I'm proud of the way my vocals go. Actually, no, my favorite song to perform is that I do the cover of Rufus Wainwright's Hallelujah. Well, Leonard Cohen's, but I do it like Rufus.
Especially going into...
And then I lead into...
It's Leonard Cohen's song, but I do it like Rufus.
Yeah. But I lead into House of the Rising Sun, but I sing Amazing Grace for the first verse. Because you can.
It fits so well.
Rocks with it. I'm proud of it.
Okay. Even though it like kills me a lot of the time afterward, I love performing Black and Tans.
Yeah.
That's one where I can just kind of go and go.
What is that one? I don't know if I recognize the name.
Oh, come out you Black and Tans.
Oh, yeah.
That was the first song I did where I made myself come up with a different drum beat for the chorus and the rest of the song. I'm like, I can't do the whole thing the same again. I have to evolve a little bit.
She knows when to stop.
I think that one.
That's funny. So do you guys have any favorite experiences from past fairs or shows that, like, specific experiences that you remember?
Drawing in crowds would be one of the ones, especially at Redland Tavern, especially for me. The first year joining with Cloverbeard, we ended the last day at the Michigan Renaissance Festival with our last set. We drew in the biggest crowd that season, packed full. We started off with Toxicity System Down, and at that time, you know, since the last day, last set, we ended with Health to the Company.
Yeah.
And the amount of people that was still there singing along as well, it was very moving.
I think about the, what was it? Literal 46 seconds straight of screaming.
That too. Yeah.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Like, what is like people, the audience? People were cheering. Like, for,
cheered.
Like, oh, during like, that moment?
Yeah.
They so there's a, on the back of our stage, which is decorated with chalk everywhere, I have written fantastic shows. And I invite up an audience member at the end of every show to mark the wall, because you have to have an audience member come up here, and you know, you can't do it yourself or else that's narcissistic. But right, an audience member could say that it's fantastic if they had the benefit of raucous applause. And
it works.
That it does audience
work. It works.
Screamed for. It was we had it on record. Was it like 46 seconds or something like that?
Straight. Wow, that was. Just past year. That was,
it was incredibly touching because, like, you'll see a bunch of people throughout the year, but then that last day when everybody's there and you're like, whoa, it's overwhelming.
Wild. It is.
Any other specific moments that you guys can think of?
When we troll the audience without them realizing it for a while.
Question mark?
We play in the castle at Renaissance Fair, too. And as people are walking in, they're just hearing instrumentals, not thinking anything of it. Mm-hmm. And it's the slow dawning about maybe a minute in. They're like, is this the Macarena? And then it just, the awareness spreads throughout the room and you can see it. And it's hilarious.
Sean and Aaron have thoroughly proved that you can Macarena to any song. Yeah. So, I mean.
Especially
with
one hand.
we do weddings and birthday parties. If they want us to be pirates, we'll be pirates as well. We actually just did one a couple days ago. And I'm known for doing a lot of improvised stuff, too, where I'll ask the audience for some words and make up a song on the spot. So I improvised a song, and then partway through, they started doing a conga line, so I started playing conga music. Then they got back towards the dance floor, so I started transitioning into the Macarena.
It was so glorious. It was hilarious.
Nobody expects to hear it, especially, you know, okay, it's a pirate band, so, like, the piratey stuff we've expected. You know, like, it's nice to have some curveballs to throw at people. Like, all right, now I'm going to play some Kesha for you.
Yeah,
it's a really good cover, though. Your Love is My Drug.
TikTok.
Or just go right into a Rickroll.
Yeah.
Which we did that, too, many times.
We're nothing if not fun. If we're when we're good, we're awesome. And when we're not good, we're fun. So,
but then that makes you good.
Yeah.
Like, when you're fun, it makes you good because it's just a different dynamic, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think something that was a big moment at fair for me that isn't necessarily whole band related, but I was knighted by the king. I was his first stag.
That's so cool.
So it's like how the queen had her hounds, which were like, you know, the people who she knighted. They're the trusted individuals and whatever. And I was the first one knighted by the king, Lord Fandon Chattington.
Nice.
Much appreciation to Joel.
Yeah, that's so cool. So you guys have talked a lot about this. Like, you've talked about engaging people and being really, like, about bringing the audience into things at shows. And I know you've mentioned a couple things, but what are just some specific things that you guys do to try to bring those people in and engage them?
My drummer's kind of hot.
Well, thank you. For reference, Sean and Catherine are married.
Yes.
this is not just random.
I mean, when she joined the band, tips skyrocketed because it went from being either me or me and another dude to look at that girl bent over the drum. She plays a cajon, which is a box that you sit on and lean forward. So visually, it's just a very appealing drum to play for a lovely woman.
I have to wear
like
a corset. It's a Renaissance fair. Okay.
Yeah. Let's be real. That kind of thing, just it's a good attention grabber. So,
And we will genuinely.
I mean, that and the fact that your tip box is a mimic.
That's also a big draw. Incredible gift from a couple of fans who my former box was one that was made by my father and had googly eyes stuck on.
Was that an Aaron doing
thing? I was like, no, it's a mimic. It's cool.
Aaron likes to put googly eyes on random people and also
things
go give them random Uno cards and say he's giving them his number.
Hula hoops. He puts googly eyes on hula hoops and wears them in the guise of a biblically accurate angel. So the former box was made by my dad, but fallen apart and practically broken. And
it looked like it was kind of screaming.
Yeah, and not in a good way. Some fans saw it and said, would you want a new box? And I was like, oh, well, you know, like, I don't really have the money to spend on something like that right now or anything. And they're like, no, we just kind of want to make one. And I was like, well, sure, whatever. And they sent me a picture of it on Facebook for like their rough idea of a design. And I was like, that looks more elaborate than what, you know, but I'm sure it'll just be like, you know, maybe like a plywood frame or whatever. No, this is a heavy duty box with hydraulics. They have to like keep it latched shut. So when you open it, it opens up. It's got a tongue with a really pearl cool. tongue piercing because it's dope like that.
Mimic with a tongue piercing.
It's got a baby mimic inside of it. Very don't talk to me.
I don't think I've ever noticed that part.
Yeah, it's a little guy. Yeah. He's inside of there.
That's cool.
It's got very don't talk to me or my son ever again energy. We keep smaller trinkets and treasures in there.
Yeah.
For sure.
We do a lot of audience engagement.
We do a lot of requests. If you can give us the chords, we will try to figure it out. It might not be great, but you'll laugh at least.
Give me the time to look up the chords if it's a, you know.
Yeah.
The last set of the day is the experimental set. I mean, we had a...
They got us to do Hot to Go. Yeah. So,
yeah,
I mean,
we did Hot to Go.
Apparently that's on after Pride Month and how many people requested it. That's on Jacques the Whipper's band list now.
Oh boy. It's on everyone's band list if they take requests, unfortunately. Do you think they'll play Hot to Go? Dude, this is Cloverbeard.
There's a few TikToks of that.
That
somewhere.
Trend was funny for about 3 weeks, and then it got so oversaturated that I could not go on TikTok for like a week.
I liked it when it was improbable.
That's fair.
It stopped being improbable after a bit.
Granted, I did thoroughly enjoy that couple of fans from Michigan Renaissance Festival got us doing Pirates Who Don't Do Anything and did the exact same gimmick and tagged us.
That's great. That's wonderful. But like for people that don't know, for people that have never been to a Renaissance fair, what's it like performing at a Renaissance fair and just really being there in general?
Performing and being there, I feel like two very different things.
Okay, well, just performing.
It can be exhausting, but I don't get much more fulfillment in life than when I go there. It's nice to go somewhere where everyone knows you.
Well, once you build yourself up, at least.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Everyone knows me there now, though. Like, it's cool. Yeah.
Depending on your crowd, it could feel amazing or like dog. Like sometimes they'll engage with you, they'll laugh, they'll have a great time. Sorry.
I don't know. We'll find out if Dedalian cuts it out in post.
Sorry about that. But yeah, you have to feed off the energy of the crowd a lot. That helps you get through a lot of it, I think.
Or you have to give that audience energy, and if they're not taking it, then you're like, these punks.
you do yell at people in the crowd.
These punks.
Yeah.
Why aren't you
especially in Missouri.
Like, are you not entertained?
It's basically.
Why did you come sit down and stare at me silently? I'll be like, ready now, clap. And they're like.
Just nothing.
Just blanket stare.
You got her for drums. What do you need me to clap for? Play your music. You want a dollar?
Yes. And then they still tip, even though they have a blanket snare.
Yeah. Well, sometimes.
Yeah.
Or you get the audience members who sit down with their back facing you.
Ooh.
But we don't get that as much anymore.
Because you yell at them.
Yeah, I tell them you got to turn around or you got to dance. Oh! Turn around or dance. Those are your options.
Hey.
We'll play dancing music if you don't. What? You want some fast music? We'll gather up your pots in the old tin can. Not shake your. Shake your ass. Yes, I'm going to say it. She said the other word.
This episode just might not air on the actual radio. So it'll just get posted on, you know, Apple Podcasts and everything of the such.
Shake your derriere.
Derriere. Yeah, shake your derriere.
Let's just cut that small segment.
Just put this the calm derriere clip in that original.
It's a lot of fun, though. I think it a lot of people assume that you're there to get drunk all day, but really kind of can't do that if you want to put on a good show for people and
yeah,
have good performing ethic. It's maybe nice to, if somebody buys you a cider, I'll drink that, but I'm not there to get toasted because
right.
we still have to function.
Yeah, still need to function. We got a lot going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're usually doing 5 shows a day if you include
King's Ale,
and then I'll be running from King's Ale to, if we can make it to pub question mark pub sing, and if not, then can I make it to front gate? And then we go back to our own stage and quietly play health to the company before we tear down.
Yeah, as far as Murph is concerned, the grounds are just so big. It's like getting from one area to the other is sometimes a chore.
It's a trek.
Many people.
Take it in stride.
And there's, a lot of people as well, especially at the end of the day when everybody's trying to bulldoze their way to pub sing. And so you guys also travel a little bit because you went to St. Louis.
Yeah. Yep.
St. Louis Run Fair.
So any funny or wild travel stories on the road?
Glove compartment burrito.
Yeah, glove compartment burrito is about the only
boys trip.
It was the one weekend I didn't go.
And it was me and Aaron and Nevada, who I mentioned earlier, and there was a burrito left in the... She left a...
No, I... Sorry, it was not mine.
No, that was your...
It was not her burrito, because you asked me to go and find your burrito that you stashed in the glove compartment.
Didn't you put it in there for me, and then I think I just forgot that it was... So I don't recall putting a
You didn't eat it after it was left in there for however long, did you?
It wasn't terribly long. It was only like, I think it was earlier that day. It was before
It was probably like 2 hours.
Yeah, it wasn't like
for some reason
old.
I was imagining this thing was in there for just like 3 weeks.
No,
or something.
I had no idea it was in there. So when they said that to me, I'm like, this is horrifying. They took my car and found a burrito that I don't even remember being in there.
It was perfect. It was exactly sustaining.
That's so funny.
Glove compartment burrito, exactly sustaining.
I got a
really big TikTok out there.
Yeah.
I was in, none of the ones that we post get big like that one, but somebody recorded me in the distance playing Toxicity, and it got like 960,000 views. And
holy mother of.
It's like,
yeah.
I was really pleased about that. Like, woo.
That's insane.
Can't go woo right now. My voice is...
Sean Garrix, a.k.a. Cloverbeard, people, the viral Irish pirate. We're running out of time a little bit here, guys, but if you guys could just let everybody know where to find you as far as social media, streaming platforms and such.
You'll be able to find us on Facebook, TikTok, Instagram. We'll keep updated on those platforms, at least Facebook and Instagram, on our upcoming shows.
We're on Spotify, YouTube. Yep. You can find a lot of our stuff that's been uploaded and or my first album, which was recorded.
I looked you up earlier, and there was a ton of videos by some dude that's not you guys.
Grillin' Pirate Pete? Yeah,
I think so.
He records a lot of local performers. He's the bomb.
Yeah.
He goes to a bunch of performers, and he just records, and uploads.
That's so cool.
I'm super grateful that he...
Oh, yeah.
And
super cool.
But then my first album was recorded in my parents' attic, and it was just me, and then my dad features on one of the songs. But
Baby Sean.
It's Baby. It's Younger Beard.
Listen,
baby.
If AJR can end up on an arena tour after recording an album in the living room of their tiny New York apartment,
they know a bit more
Clover
about recording.
Clover Beard can record an album in his mother's attic.
No, we're looking for a good recording artist right now because we have a lot of stuff we need to get recorded.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys for joining. It's been a blast. And thank you guys for tuning in to listen to Front Row Backstage and listen to Clover Beard and Crew. Thanks for tuning in to Front Row Backstage. We hope you enjoyed this week behind the curtains of the media world. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram for more information. And join us next week for more stories from the front lines of entertainment. Until then, stay tuned, because whether it's on stage, behind the scenes, or over the airwaves, the real action is everywhere.
Keep connected with LCC Connect at lccconnect.org.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
K-12 Operations at Lansing Community College is a proud collaborator of the Lansing Promise Scholarship available to graduating high school seniors. Find information at lcc.edu/hope.
Thank you for listening to LCC Connect. I'm Paul Schwartz, and I host a show called The Safety Plan. The Safety Plan is about the latest cyber scams and how to avoid them. You can catch The Safety Plan here on LCC Connect or listen anytime at lccconnect.org.
Far from the city where the Lorax roams free is the home of a magical truffula trees. They grow happy and healthy and thick as you please, just waiting for visits from yous and from me's.
Whoa.
In a place you will love with things you'll adore us, it's a magical spot. We call it the forest.
Look, everyone here needs the trees.
And who are you?
Wait, I'm the Lorax, guardian of the forest. I speak for the trees.
Visit the animals. Come see the plants. From the mighty sequoia to the tiniest ants. Discover its beauty. Take time to relax. See brown barbaloots or even the Lorax.
I feel so alive. I just like hearing you say it.
The forest is there for you to explore. So come once to see it, then come back lots more. Visit discovertheforest.org. This message has been brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Lansing Community College welcomes transfer students. Transfer students may apply transfer credits towards their LCC degree, certificate, or transfer program. Learn more at lcc.edu/youbelong.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
This is Bob Myers from the Historical Society of Michigan with a Michigan History Moment. It was called the Rainbow Inn. Located on the southern edge of Petoskey, it was northern Michigan's only African-American resort hotel and restaurant. Its clientele included people of all races, colors, and creeds. The Rainbow Inn opened in 1950 and was the brainchild of William Thomas West, an African-American porter and chef on the Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Detroit Railroad. The railroad provided passenger service to Petoskey, Harbor Springs, and Mackinac City during the mid-20th century. West, a 25-year veteran of the rail company, lived in northern Michigan during the summer season. He knew firsthand that many hotels, restaurants, and other businesses in the north were just as segregated as their southern counterparts. In 1949, West bought a three-story boarding house and carriage house near the railroad tracks in Petoskey. The boarding house was originally built in the 1880s as a mansion for Frederick Bowerly, a wealthy woodenware manufacturer. It was located in what people called Hungry Hollow, where many Native Americans lived. West took his retirement savings and bought the building on a land contract. He and his wife, Gail, spent the next year remodeling it, and in the spring of 1950 opened their restaurant and hotel as the Rainbow Inn. The name signified that they welcomed customers of any color. The couple placed advertisements for their hotel and restaurant in African-American newspapers, publicizing the Rainbow Inn as a Northern Michigan destination for people of color. The inn also became a favorite place for African-American domestic servants, who spent summers in the area with their employers. The Rainbow Inn continued to prosper, but years of protests began to change America's political landscape. On July 2, 1964, President Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act of 1964. No longer could businesses refuse service because of race, color, religion, or national origin. The Civil Rights Act also meant that America's black resorts, such as Idlewild in western Michigan, were no longer necessary. But it was an accidental fire, not the Civil Rights Act, that ended the Rainbow Inn. On March 8, 1965, the Rainbow Inn burned to the ground. It was never rebuilt. William West died in 1970, and his wife Gail passed the following spring. Now, the Rainbow Inn is only a memory of an inclusive place that served travelers of all colors. This Michigan History Moment was brought to you by MichiganHistoryMagazine.org.
Sharing the voices of Lansing Community College. Visit us at lccconnect.org.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
Lansing Community College Performing Arts features several events and presentations throughout the year. Find more information by visiting lcc.edu/showinfo.
Keep yourself connected with what's happening in Mid-Michigan by joining us for Community Convos, a show from LCC Connect, where we talk with the people who put the festive in our festivals and those that give traction to our attractions. Find out who's on the convo and listen on demand at lccconnect.org.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Lansing Community College's Business and Community Institute provides businesses with customized, synergistic trainings that realize logistical opportunity. Learn more about the future of business today at lcc.edu/BCI.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
This is Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, a podcast and radio program presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Most any contemporary musical style can trace its roots back to the blues. Time Signatures explores the blues and its musical connections with captivating interviews, lively discussions, and news from the world of the blues.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, diving up in
And now, here he is, your host, Jim Irvin.
Well, hi there, and welcome to Time Signatures. I'm your host, Jim Irvin, and I'm truly excited to welcome today's guest to the show. If you haven't been fortunate enough to catch her on the road, maybe you might have caught her set at the Chicago Blues Fest, a killer set, I might add. But if you missed that,
I need to add a link to the episode because you've got to see it. She flat out owned the stage that day. Not bad considering it was her first Chicago Blues Fest either. She's a 12-time BMA nominee, a four-time winner in 2019, 2020, and 24 for Horn Player of the Year, and 2022 for Contemporary Blues Female Artist of the Year, but also a Blues Blast Award winner for the Horn Player of the Year as well. And listen, there's more in the offing. I can assure you of that. It's my great honor to welcome this sexy powerhouse, Vanessa Collier. Welcome to Time Signatures. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. I have to start with a little bit of background, Vanessa, because I'm relatively new to your music, as I explained to you before we started recording. How and where did you get your start in the blues?
I mean, if you want to go to the very beginning, it was like sixth grade jazz band is like playing a 12-bar blues at 6:30 or 7 in the morning. Like that is really how I started. And okay. I fell in love with that, you know, just understanding that you can play out your emotions without having to sing words or anything like that. You can sort of connect to everything going on in your life and express your own self, right? And so it definitely started there. And then I kind of, because you play saxophone, you get shoved in a bunch of different directions. Because saxophone just belongs everywhere. That's my own opinion. But you know, you get put in the jazz world, and I was there for a little bit, and then really came back to the blues when I started playing with Joe Louis Walker, which was going into, it was like the summer before my senior year of college.
Nice.
And so I met him and sat in with him in Philly, and then he was like, hey, you want to go on the road? And so of course I said yes. Yeah. And so he's really what brought me back to the blues. You know, I was kind of not, I knew I wanted to play music, but I knew like jazz wasn't quite my thing. Like I love listening to it, but in terms of just self-expression, it's not,
right.
I don't connect to it that way. So playing with Joe sort of reconnected me to everything that I love, you know? So Joe is so great at mixing genres. Yes, he has the blues thing. He can play it acoustic, electric, however you like it. Chicago, you know, like any style, he's like pretty great at it. But he's also throwing gospel and funk and rock and just everything in there. And so he's really how it all got started and how I got my, you know, dip my toes in the water and was just kind of like, yeah, this is for me. Like, I got to get on the road, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Vanessa, talk about the influences on your musical growth as you were coming up. Who were some of your big artists that you really enjoyed?
Yeah, so I mean, early on, again, being put into the jazz world, like saxophone wise, my like all time was Cannonball Adderley, who's more of a jazz guy, but he's also playing blues over everything.
Okay,
he's one of those guys that's just heavily influenced by the blues. So he was one of my favorites on saxophone. My professor, like my teacher, my mentor, is still one of my favorites. His name is Chris Vidala. So he played with Chuck Mangione for 20 plus years and
oh wow, like,
was the first call in the DC metro area. So like when Aretha rolled into town, when BB King rolled into town, literally everybody, whoever rolled into town, he was the woodwind artist to call. And nice. So like I studied with him for 7 years and just like loved, he just had this such a joyful way of playing that it gave me a lot of joy and love of playing this instrument without getting lost in the technicality of learning how to play it, if that makes sense.
Yep.
And then, you know, of course, like we listened to a lot in my house. There was the Eagles and Toto and, you know, Aretha Franklin, BB King, Ray Charles, all that growing up.
What a nice eclectic mix, huh?
Yeah. I mean, throw in some country from, you know, our Texas days. Like there's just a little bit of everything in there.
Sure.
So I kind of got turned on to Nora Jones and Bonnie Raitt sort of late into that, like going into college, and they became two of my big influences as well. So yeah, lots from all over.
Very cool. At what point in your life did you figure out that you were going to be involved in music professionally?
So, I mean, I knew that I wanted to do it, you know, in some capacity. I was a basketball player and I love food. And so at one point I was like, I'm going to be a restaurateur, a basketball player and a saxophone player. And I have no idea how, but
sure, why not? I wanted
to do. Yeah. Like, sure. You have all the time in the world to do all three of those things. But really, like, I had made the decision, like, I think it was sophomore year, that I was going to leave basketball and focus on the music. It didn't quite turn out that way because my coach begged me to come back. But 10th grade is sort of my decision to pursue this fully. And that was, again, thanks to Chris Vidala, because I had no idea you could have music as a career, you know?
Yeah. I want to talk about Chicago for a minute because, girl, you were on top of your game. And I'm not just blowing wind here. I'm not just making things up. I watched that entire performance, and I got to be honest, of everything that I saw from that weekend, that was one of my favorite sets. And this was your first time there. So I want you to talk about that experience and how well you were received.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Chicago Blues Fest was like bucket list item for me. It had been that way for 5 years. Actually, when I signed on with my former booking agent, he asked me, like, what are the top five festivals you want? And Chicago was like number one for me. And so to have that opportunity come up, I mean, I know it popped on our schedule and I was like, yes, I don't care about the money. Like, yes, I want to play it. I was so excited for that event coming up to it. I mean, I had just recorded a new record. I was still working on the record and just like, I don't know, it just seemed like a couple dreams were coming true all at once. You know, this new record is great. And then, you know, to get to the opportunity to play this, which of course it did rain, but like for us, like three of us, I think it was our first time ever playing that festival. And we all had wanted to play it. So we all went in with this idea of like, this is totally a dream come true. We're just going to have fun. And so we had a lot of, I mean, you know, the Chicago crowd is like undeterred. So, you know, they're just huddled under the part that was covered during the rain and just like gave us all the energy in the world. And it was, Shamika Copeland was sitting with her family off to the side. And, nice. You know, just like, this is cool. This is surreal. You know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it was great. And the reception was great. So I've had a lot of people actually come up to me and talk about this show being like, just like, oh my gosh.
Oh yeah. Know, well, and you had a incredible band backing you too. You can talk about them for a minute.
Totally. Yeah. So that's kind of what I call the dream team. So I had Laura Chappell on guitar and Scott Sutherland on bass and then Byron Cage on drums and vocals. And, you know, it's funny that this band, like, it's kind of the band I've always wanted. And now every time we sort of play together, it just falls into place. It doesn't, like, we just made this record, 8 songs, and we recorded 9, but we made it in like, I don't know, maybe 15 hours, like cranked them out. You know, just because they're so great, so easy to work with. They just want the music to be good. And that's, you know, working with them, there's no ego from anybody. They just want the music to be great. And that's just makes my job very easy, you know?
Yeah. It was so seamless. It was so seamless watching them play it. I mean, Laura, forget about it. She was crazy good. But I got to admit, I was kind of caught off guard because I've only known you as a sax player. But there you were on stage in Chicago, wailing away on a telly, and you got some mad talents here. But you have any other instruments that you play in your arsenal too, or no?
Yeah, I mean, so I've been on and off taking piano lessons since high school. So like,
oh cool,
Sweating Like a Pig is something I write on piano, and I play when we're not on stage. but yeah, so I play a lot of the woodwinds. I just put flute on the new record, and then I've picked up sort of bass and drums along the way, and just constantly trying to search for new ways to write, new ways to hear the music, you know, because the bass player hears it from a different perspective than I would as the front person, you know. So it's just, I like to learn all the different parts, and, you know, I love good music and figuring out what makes it great and what makes it feel good. So
yeah. Well, I want to turn the page here and talk about the new album, called Do It My Way, and you truly are doing things your own way on this one, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's 8 originals, so there's not a cover on it. From start, you know, produce the whole thing, put flute, alto saxes, play a little resonator, and then a little bit of slide guitar as well on the telly, on the mule caster. So it's just, again, I like to make records that represent me. This one's a little bit more soulful, funky rain that I've dipped my toes in, but I haven't really made a full record, you know, with that intention of sort of crossing into that world. So I've enjoyed this record from start to finish. Is just kind of like, yeah, here it is. Like I you know, people can love it, people can hate it, but like, if I love it, that's kind of what matters to me, you know? So yeah.
Well, it kind of caught me off guard, I'll be honest with you, because I had just gotten done listening to your live album and I was like, oh my God, I got to hear more. And then I heard, the album was being released, and I talked to Nick, I think it was. And I'm like, dude, you got to send it to me. And I listened to it and I went, well, this is different. But then I started going back and listening to your other stuff. And I believe it was a Heart on the Line album. Kind of reminded me a little bit of that album, because I guess it's safe to say that you prefer a more soulful flavor in your blues. Would that be safe?
Yeah, I mean, I think it kind of just depends. I kind of write what the song wants to be. So, you know, like to me, When It Don't Come Easy is not necessarily soulful. It's more of a Southern blues kind of thing. But I love, you know, the Etta James blues and funk and all that kind of Sharon Jones, all that stuff. And so it's kind of, it's just me as a songwriter. It's me as a player. It's me as a person that I kind of can't choose one particular path and just go down it. I am just varied in all of my tastes. So, yeah.
Well, and let me say, I don't mind that. Some people, they want a cookie cutter blues or this or that or the other thing. Totally. I like a little bit of everything. And I always refer to the blues as a buffet. You take a little of this, you take a little of that to your liking. You know, you don't have to have everything the way I like it. And that's the thing that I like about the blues. But now I noticed a recurring theme that was woven throughout this album. And I don't normally pick out particular songs, but the one that caught my eye was Rosetta. And I'd like you to talk about that song for just a minute. That's got quite a message in it. Yes.
Totally. Yeah. So, you know, I can't remember when, but I learned about Sister Rosetta Tharpe a few years ago, and then just kind of like learning, like, you know, of course I love her music. She is someone who, when you watch her, the few recordings we have of her performing, if you watch her perform, she is such a great entertainer. But other than that, she is pushing the guitar into this realm that everyone kind of picked up on. Elvis Presley is someone who picked up on it and turned it into his own thing, you know? So she's such an inspiration, and yet no one knows her name. And yet, like, she sat, her grave sat unmarked, I think, until 2013 in Philly. And so it's just like, she has been such a backbone of where blues music has gone, of where R&B music has gone, and yet we don't really celebrate her. And so, you know, I just wanted to, she's one of my heroes for sure. I mean, just wailing on a guitar, and all the things that she had achieved were unheard of for a woman, let alone a Black woman in that time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's selling out, she sold out like huge stadiums, you know, and went to Europe and all these things. I think her wedding still has like one of the highest attendees, I'm pretty sure. But anyway, besides that, I just wanted to write something that celebrates her, that lifts her achievements into the light. And, you know, whoever hears the record will hopefully go dig into her stuff. And, you know, that's one of the first things that we kind of bonded over, was doing sort of something Rosetta style. And this one is just, it was great to have her on it, and, you know, just celebrate Sister Rosetta Tharpe.
Very cool. And I want to ask you about this, because a lot of the females that are in the blues don't seem to get the regard that a lot of the males do. And I know that you addressed a lot of there. You actually, I think that's why I talk about the theme that was woven throughout the album was a decidedly female type of a theme through it. And I really, I liked it, you know, because it was recurring and there were different songs that spoke about the strength of women. And talk about that for just a minute.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think historically women have kind of been underestimated. And definitely I have felt that. I kind of graduated from college thinking like the music industry can't be what it was, you know, like when the major labels said, you have to look like this, you have to do this, you have to do this to kind of make it. And then I made a record with an independent record label and it was sort of the same thing of like, oh no, we can't sell records without, you know, with a woman looking serious on the cover. It's like, what are you talking about? It's a serious record. Why do I have to be smiling and looking, you know what I mean? So I yep. think the industry is very much, it's very antiquated still to this day. And not to say that there aren't people fighting and aren't people changing it and paying attention. But on the whole, there is still this inequity that's going on. And so it's been my experience. I've been in the industry now for 10 years under my own name. And you still experience that, whether it's the pay gap or whether it's just generically how people may treat you at a festival or ask things of you that they're not going to ask, you know, my male counterparts on the scene, you know. So it's just my truth right now. I'm not complaining about it, but it does take a lot of strength to be a woman and to be a woman in this industry and to survive and to do it in the way and dictate terms rather than have these things put on you. So that is definitely, you know, do it my own way. That is absolutely like, I'm here, I'm doing it the way that I want to. And if you don't like it, that's kind of your problem, not mine. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, you know, I interviewed Joanna Connor and the Women of Chicago Blues in as they were getting ready to do their program just before Chicago Blues Fest kicked off.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things that she mentioned is there's been a lot of inequity involved in the music world. And I've always had an open door policy for blues musicians. I don't care if you're male, female, don't matter to me. If I catch your music and I dig it, I want to hear more about it, you know?
Absolutely.
And, you know, so I'll say the same thing to you. The door is always open, you know,
well,
whenever you need to promote something. But I like to see the things that you are doing, the things that Joe Bonamassa is doing to change that culture so that people don't have to believe that they have to have a big record label behind them. Labels are good. Totally. Labels are good.
Yeah.
But you don't have to. You can do it your own way if you want to.
Right. So absolutely. Yeah.
I'm going to turn the page once again here. The Keep It Sexy Tour kicked off on September 6th. It's coming to a city near you soon. Sadly, those of us in Michigan are going to have to wait until early 2025. But trust me when I tell you, we will be there rooting for you at the Token Lounge in Westland. I want you to talk about the tour for a minute and what fans can expect from your show.
Yeah, I think honestly, I'm still in the process of figuring out how to change the show. I mean, you mentioned the live record that I put out in 2022, 2 years ago. And that was sort of a staple of like who I have become over the last 9-10 years. And now I'm sort of at this point where I'm sort of changing direction. I'm going to definitely play the stuff that people love. But I'm also going to play a lot, you know, I'm playing a lot from the new record. And so figuring out what fits where and, you know, how to design a new set. And that's always, you know, takes some trial and error. So that's what we're doing is just trying some different stuff every night, trying a few different things from the new record, and then keeping the staples. But always, you know, my intention is always about connection. So one thing I feel like we don't have in the world, largely because we're on screens and we're on social media and we're on all these things, which are great. But the downside is that when we're face to face, we're not in the present moment and we're not connecting, you know, and I feel like that is important. So my whole point is to tell stories and connect with people, and hopefully that whatever the story is, it's going to connect to something in your life, and hopefully uplift you. That is the whole thing. We want to leave you dancing, sure, and smiling and feeling better than you did before. So high energy stuff, but definitely thinking about, you know, what can I give to the audience? What can I leave them with? And hopefully, you know, it's just kindness, dignity, respect. Like those three things are staples in my show. So wonderful. That's my plan.
There you go. Well, there's a great deal of talk about keeping the blues alive, Vanessa. There appears to be a nice crop of younger musicians coming to the fore these days, yourself included. It's been said that to keep the blues alive, you have to be willing to take it a little further down the road. But there's no instruction manual for this change. What keeps the blues alive? What does that mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. I am not a stickler, I would say, in deciding, you know, the blues has to stay like this, or blues has to be this. I think for me, keeping the blues alive is keeping the spirit alive. And what I love about blues music is it is very improvisational. It's very like direct and to the point. It's very much about life. And so keeping that spirit alive, you know, R.L. Burnside wrote some great stories. You know, it's just whatever speaks to your soul to me is what the blues is. You know, and if it happens in a minor 12 bar, great, you know, or if it's inspired by those 12 bar, then even better. So I think it's just, it is about connection. It's about pizzazz. It's about, you know, just putting your own little stamp on something, you know, whether you're playing with a butter knife, or you're playing with your fingers, or you know, whatever. It's very much got to be you at all times.
Absolutely. Vanessa, where can people go to purchase your music, buy some merch, maybe even book you for a show?
Absolutely. So the website is definitely the central hub for everything. VanessaCollier.com. Collier is the last name. And then, you know, of course, we're up on all the streaming sites, all the music up there. But if you want a t-shirt or anything, you can buy directly from me at the website, and I usually hand pack them and ship them out as well. So,
oh, wow,
it is directly coming from me.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, Vanessa Collier, my sincere thanks and appreciation for taking some time out of your day to talk with us. I appreciate it. Certainly an exciting thing to watch this new album come out. I wish you much success on that and look forward to seeing you in February.
Yes, I can't wait. Thank you so much for having me on, Jim. I really appreciate it.
Well, that wraps up this edition of Time Signatures with Jim Irvin. Once again, my deepest appreciation to Vanessa Collier for being with us today. But more importantly, I appreciate all of you for taking time to check us out. After all, if it wasn't for you guys, none of this would be possible. Jim Irvin reminding you that keeping the blues alive is everyone's responsibility, but preserving the history of the blues one story at a time is my mission. Until next time, so long.
This has been Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. For more information on cabs, visit capitalareablues.org. You can find this episode and past episodes at lccconnect.org. The Time Signatures theme song, Michigan Roads, is used by permission and was written by Root Doctor, featuring Freddie Cunningham.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, diving up in
Until next time, keep on keeping the blues alive.
Baby, I'm home.
This has been a presentation of LCC Connect, a weekly program that features the voices, vibes, and vision of Lansing Community College. All shows featured on LCC Connect are recorded at the WLNZ studio, located on LCC's downtown campus. Each program is podcast-based and can be heard anytime at lccconnect.org. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on one of our shows, connect with us by emailing lcc-connect
at lcc.edu.